to arrange for a meeting at which you want to attend later. Is that about some stuff or something?
Yeah, well, that's the, because...
In other words, there were no promises made of any kind. And if anything is to happen, it's going to take place when the president meets us.
I was in no position to make any... A presidential advisor does not make agreements.
Well, I know, but...
That's what I would say.
Well, usually, though, they discuss the possibility of what may happen and all of that. And I'm very hopeful that that was the purpose of the meeting. It was to lay the groundwork for a meeting at some time sooner than the present, wherein it will then be decided as to what's going to happen.
Mr. President, I think that's a good statement.
Right. Thanks for that. Well, very good.
Mr. President, we have one problem. We have had 2 weeks ago, we had 4 hearings on China, not anticipating this. I'm sure there's been no leak, it was just a coincidence. And we have some other jobs. There's no objection. I assume that it's along in the committee, which is very interested in it, expressing itself without any relation to what you said, but the committee disagrees with it. Because they have very deep interest in the history of this matter. It's particularly been inspired by the papers that have come back. As you know, the first volume of that series, which has been sent to the Congress, deals with the origin of our policy with China, particularly that 3, 4, 4, 5. And there several members are very interested in this. I say all the committee is. They're very sympathetic, and I certainly am. I completely agree with what you're doing. I mean, we don't want to do anything that is anywhere handicapped. But it's going to be impossible, I think, to stifle the committee's inquiries into this without any reference to what you're doing. I mean, just as an examination of what's happened and why we got this way, and also what they think would like to see happen on the substantive question of this morning.
The only thing I could say, Bill, on that, I would appreciate it if you would have a talk with Bill Rogers. That is, just have a good communication. And there might be a highly sensitive thing which you would refer you to executive at this point. I think there might be, but I don't doubt it. I don't think there would. After all, this is all public. A lot of this is already public. What do you think, Bill?
Mr. President, that's right. I agree with Senator Fulbright that you obviously can't ask Congress to stop.
No.
But if we could have the opportunity to take a look at anything that you want to publish, to be sure that...
Well, these hearings we had were public, and they had no knowledge at all that you anticipated that doing these meetings and anticipated, but they have very interested views about things that have been announced. Well, the number of members as well as some of the witnesses. And some of these witnesses are very knowledgeable people who have been in this area, such as Whitey and Thompson and others have been in the executive branch. These subjects come up. It has nothing to do with what your adversary is or what one way or the other. The matter is in the press, so they express themselves, and I anticipate they want to continue to have their views about what more has been done. This is simply the normal effort in trying to advise, we'll say, with executives. And I think that it's a good opportunity to establish better relations, I may say, on a consultative basis. And I don't anticipate any desire on the part of anybody in the committee to hinder in any way this. Now, you may think their gratuitous advice may not be entirely accord with you, but that's all it is. It's simply advice on what they think would promote the objective of what I think you have in mind in these meetings. That's about all that matters.
Mr. President, anything has been made public, of course, we and I would just hope that on other statements by members of the committee on this subject, that we would have the opportunity at least to discuss it with you before you make the statements, because it's going to be difficult for the common Chinese to differentiate between Chinese and Chinese relations.
Let me say this, us and Reese and us, let's talk quite cold turkey. If one of you, any leader around this table, gets and says something and says,
when the president goes to China, he ought to do this or that or the other thing. You can see what that is. You want to remember that whoever sits on the other side of the table is not going to have any inhibitions in that respect. If, on the other hand, they don't understand our system, they think, well, this, that we are hamstrung on this or that or the other issue, I think that would not be, perhaps helpful. Now, there's a line in between. I mean, views can be expressed, but, for example, let us go to the extreme thing. A resolution passed by the Congress or the committee or something of that sort, indicating that our view about what we are relations with China ought to be is this, that, or the other thing, prior to the time we have a meeting, I do not think would be good. On the other hand, if you want to, that's why we want to still set up this consultative process. If you have strong feelings about it, which you do, you and others, then if you could let us know privately, if you could let on that sort of thing, having in mind, put yourself, if all of you could, before you make a statement or pass a resolution, and that's it, in the mind of whoever has to sit, because I will have to sit, to talk to these fellows and say, all right, we'd like to have you have this information. We'd like to know if we want to, we have strong feelings about it. Let me know. I want to know. But if on the other hand, it's done publicly, you can then see that the cards are, I've got this right, you can't play. That's really what it gets down to. Would you agree, Henry?
I think, I just basing it on what I saw there, I think something that they really understood that you did before we talked to them, such as hearings you held in June.
Yeah, the whole hearings is
I don't think that would bother them. I don't think it would bother them if you publish testimony from academic experts, for example.
But these are public hearings.
Yeah, right. That's all right. On the other hand, they are apt to think that if you make a speech now, the president ought to do this or that, that you might be working in collusion with each other and that sort of thing. So if Bill could at least give you the context of where we stand, and then you can still decide, because they have an enormous domestic problem of their own, and anything we say is apt to be used by their own domestic opponents, either to push them or to...
It's a question of judgment, Bill, and I think that you and Bill Rogers have been talking. Doc, you go to your side, you do the same with your committee.
I think that's the committee. If we can just have an agreement, I think we all really have one. That these things are very sensitive. And before, if you're going to issue a report or draft a resolution, then we can talk about it in advance so you can get our view. We don't need to ask.
We decide to go otherwise, we understand. But give us a chance to say, because our view, what we say might influence you. You wouldn't want to go. Look, everybody around this table wants us to succeed. Because the stakes are so high.
Mr. President, do we have any action, any information about the reaction in North Vietnam and North Korea? Do they give them a problem similar to what Taiwan gives us?
Well, Secretary of State answered that off the record.
Yes, they're having serious problems, and they've had it. It was an editorial that they his paper this morning saying that they wanted to let the Chinese know that they, the big powers could push them around, and if they thought the big powers were going to get together, the Chinese thought the big powers could get together in terms of future North Vietnam and other things coming. So they got this. But I'm sure that the Chinese have the same problem, maybe not the same degree that we have with the Republic of China. By the way, I haven't even announced it yet on my radio that at the meeting is taking place. This editorial was a very circumlocuted one. It said that, but it didn't refer to any specific evidence.
There was a rumor that the Chinese said they were willing to go to another Geneva conference looking toward the ending of the war in Vietnam, or something. This was in the paper. He's expecting to end about that. It had nothing to do, as far as I know, with your
sentence. No, it was with the deputy, well, with opposition leader in Australia.
That's right. statement, and of course, that was encouraging, I mean, insofar as it went, that they were willing to cooperate and so.
On our part, Bill, I think that you say, speculation on our part, or on the part of those who would be considered to be privy to what our position was, that this is going to be put pressure on our key of the names, this is going to have this or that effect on the Russians. That kind of speculation would have exactly the opposite effect. That's what we're worried about, you see, because the Chinese have essentially sent it to be a terribly delicate problem, just as we have a problem. Look, our problem is very delicate with the ROC and with the Japanese, to a lesser extent, and the Indonesians, just to take that many, not to mention the Russians. Now, we are going forward with putting ROC off to a special side. Let me say that we are continuing our dialogue with the Japanese, with the Indians, with the Indonesians, and with the Russians. And we're going right on. We're working on salt. We're working on Berlin and all the rest. We're not stopping one bit. And then because it's to our, as I said, we see good relations with all nations. On the other hand, if out of this appears that as a result of this trip, that now, and, well, let they put it this way, they're suspicious, actually. They're very not sure of the totalitarian society, it's just conspiratorial. We understand that. They, of course, admit it. They did. And particularly that the United States did this not because, this is the important thing, not because we were seeking a better relationship with mainland China, but because we were using this for the purpose of frying other fish. You see, that just has a devastating effect to say, aha, you're not going to use us. That's why we're not trying to hold anything, but it's, I just think it's very important to avoid that trap.
It seems to me that if we get us something, if you wind down, and I think you are, the war in Vietnam, that the chance of stability there in that area of the future would be greatly enhanced.
Well, you can look at it. You can look at it this way. You can look at it this way. Let me say, the war in Vietnam not only is being won, it will be that one way or another. So I know that's true right now. Looking to the future, but let's face it, it's a very tough decision. And you get good argument on this on both sides. But let's come back to the fundamental point. Why do we? There is an idea, and I think this idea had validity 10 years ago. As a matter of fact, in all honesty, many columnists have written it. It was one of his advocates. You all know that. The idea was that here on the rimland of Asia were some free nations, non-communist nations, and it was to our interest to play those nations, to strengthen those nations against what was then, as evidenced by the Korean War, and something by the adventure or in India, and something of course naturally Vietnam, and Indonesia and the rest of the communist Chinese were out to develop it all. So therefore we have on the rimland this policy. Now situations change. Put yourself in the position of the Japanese, unarmed and denied by their constitution the right to rearm. Put yourself in the position of the Koreans. Put yourself in the position of the Indonesians. 120 million people with no capability for self-defense, just capability of internal security. Put yourself in the position of the Indians. Many times the Chinese decided like that. The whole point of the matter is that and we cannot speak for them. standpoint, it seems to me that while the Asian world will always be, Carl, as we do, well, you've been out there a lot, it will always be in flux, it will be in flux for us as long as we can look forward to the future. Seems to us that we can play a more effective restraining peacemaking role by having communication with the Chinese than by not having communication. That is how the world changes. Henry, would that be a fair statement as to where that is?
Absolutely. I would like to say one thing, though, Mr. Speaker. From my observation, any speculation of the impact of what we are doing on Vietnam is bound to have a counterproductive
Vietnam.
That, to them, has to be a matter of the most vital ideological consequence. And therefore, if one wants to say anything that contributes to peace in the world will, of course, also have some impact on the peace in Asia, in Southeast Asia, that's all right. But anything that has the slightest implication the other way is going to force them into things that will defeat any byproducts that come out of
it. Let's also make a comment that this relates also to Japan.
Yeah. Americans have we can't stop ourselves saying the things we think. And if we do this in public now, it should be not come off. I mean, the Chinese Communist are very sensitive about the relationship with Japan. And if there's any discussion about how this relationship, our relationship, can and proceed to facilitate, of course Vietnam is even worse. If it looks as if this visit...
Well, the only problem there, Mr. Secretary, is this, that we have a tremendous number of people who think we ought to move out of Vietnam right now, and they want something. And if any movement on your part that isn't productive to that end doesn't satisfy them, they just raise hell about it, right, Frank? You know, and we all want out. I think we all want out tomorrow. If we get out tomorrow, and would that be the first thing to ask? Will this contribute? Ending the war in Vietnam.
What do you say, Carl? I know I'm dead.
I'm not happy.
Well, sure, I think it will.
You can't just stand mute when they ask you.
I hope so. I hope so.
Well, I have to say, sure, I think it will. I think it's a good thing, and it will contribute to better relations.
Well, that's good. I think a whole lot of good. The purpose of this trip, as I said, is a journey for peace.
And
we think that we'll contribute to peace in the world. And I think it will. And they say, well, I think it will contribute to peace. I think that if you say that,
well, that's what it's meant.
Oh, we have to say that.
That's right.
Oh, yes. That's Sunday day, let's face it.
Well, now, this year, we have some other years here. It's starting. I think those years, in my view, I read all this weekend, the original hearing in the Foreign Relations Committee on the time of Hurley's resignation. I think that background will support your move with my guess, although it happened 25 years ago.
Sure.
I don't see how that could have
already happened.
Could possibly interfere with him, I don't think. I'm just examining the origin of our present involvement and how we got here. That's what it is. I think it ought to help, and it was not easy. Do what your president does.
Mr. President, can I say one more word on Vietnam? Because it seems to me that it's perfectly permissible and advisable, probably necessary, to say you hope that this will contribute to peace in the world. And that's what the president said. On the other hand, if you say in Vietnam, that could cause the Chinese Communists to feel we're double crossing. So just be general. Don't be specific.
Talking about just follow-on statements.
That's right. It's a follow-on thing, that's right.
It makes a lot of difference also whether the senator or the speaker expressed their own personal
views
at some point.
Well, we don't say, you know,
so we can have a line out. We all understand how the questions come and so forth and so on. I was very, very speculative. Little as you can, remembering that it might hurt. Because you want me to. But second, my under no circumstances speculate that we said this would help him be announced. Because that is absolutely verboten, because I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that this is going to help in Vietnam. I'm not saying it's going to help in our relations with Japan. I'm not going to say that it's going to help make India more secure. I'm not saying it's going to make India peace and sacred. I'm not saying that it does or does not help with our relations with the Russians. All that I'm saying is that I believe, that's what I was trying to say in that general statement, that looking at the world, that this, and it's a close value, it's a close call, looking at the world now as compared to still what it was even 25 years ago or certainly 10 years ago, I believe that the interests of peace in the world will be better served by the two major powers in the world, the biggest communist nation and the biggest, frankly, the most powerful free nation, to have some communication. That's really what it gets down to.
Mr. President, everybody brought it. Everyone gets the favor is going to be as you said it. Everyone gets the favor is going to be as though you said it, that we said
it. Well, in the world, there's no problem.
I know, I had a problem with that last 40 dollars.
One of the most difficult things that any answer would be with respect to an answer to China would have to tell what answer could be given.
Well, why don't you ask, Bill, if you don't mind, to answer that a little while.
If everybody can resist the temptation to answer questions, you don't have to answer questions.
No, with National China, why don't you say that? And the Secretary of State will be making a statement to the Congress within perhaps the next 2 weeks. But Mr. President, just say that. But I'm not going to go beyond that. Secretary of State will be making that. We're looking into that situation now. Is that all right?
That's good. Mr. President,
that would be the best thing for us if you could say that.
Good. Mr. President, may I just say this now as one round table line. I think you made a good move, and I'm going to say it's up to you to carry it out.
Yeah.
And I'm going to back you up. I think it's the most difficult to sign it to. It helps them run a table.
It's very not easy.
I think there's a lot of self-discipline here on our part to go around the table here. We know very well how to answer these questions. We just self-discipline ourselves. I'm going to say responsibility is on the right man.
Great, I get to know 750 million people, so what are they going to do? Here's the whole plan. Let's look for just a moment. We don't have a better friend, for example, when the chips are down in Britain. But boy, we have some tough things to negotiate with, for example, on agricultural products and a few other things. Real tough. Japan, a friend of the United States, is. We've got some tough competition with Japan. They are our friends. And we will continue to. We move with the Soviet. Here, we are not talking about people with similar systems of government, but totally different systems with different ideas as to what kind of a world we ought to have. And so whatever progress we made, simply the fact that we meet, you know, we get along, and maybe talk about our similarities and the rest, laugh together, same jokes, etc. That doesn't mean that those differences are not. What I'm simply saying is that no one should consider this with any euphoria. If there's anybody with a less euphoric attitude on international negotiations, on symmetry, and on relations with the major communist countries, it is myself. And yet I know it's necessary. And I know that while their interests are very different from ours in many respects, the Soviets' interests are different, the Chinese' interests are different, that there are certain areas where by necessity we have to find a way to talk and maybe to get along. Now the other thing I would say is that looking way down the road, we can put this in historical perspective. And Carl, I couldn't agree more. The immediate problem is what you're going to be faced with on Southeast Asia. Looking at an historic perspective, here we are negotiating on salt. Maybe we get a negotiation. Maybe we get an arrangement with the Soviets. Once we get that arrangement, what do we find? We find that as far as it is concerned, that it is one in which the United States, Britain, and France, the other two nuclear powers, all have agreed. What does it mean 20 years from now with another nation outside the club? Nothing. So, as we look at terms of peace in the world, the point is that it is difficult to have it with any great power participating that may have different interests. It is impossible to have it with a great power totally out of the world community. That's what this game is about. And that's why we're being asked.
Well, Mr. President, you mentioned Manhattan Project. Is it all right for us to say that this is the best kept secret of your administration?
No, Alan, I go further. It's the only secret.
On our side, you're walking on eggshells, and on the other side, Joe and Lau, as the highest signatory so far, is walking on eggshells, and very likely he will be suspicious of anything which is said here, which might be used to break down the possibility of a meeting, or to create a situation to come, which is hopefully will take place in the not too distant future. I think the attitude of the group, from what I've heard this morning, is one of understanding. There will be some questions asked which will be most difficult to answer, and if they are difficult, I would assume that the best way to answer them would be no comment. And if answers are made, I would assume also that the best thing we could do would be to say, this is my own personal opinion. This does not represent the opinion of the administration, because the administration itself is not in a position where it knows what's going to be done. There's a lot of spadework, a lot of groundwork that's still to be accomplished before the meeting takes place. And because of the delicacy of the situation which has developed and the promise, it would appear to me that what we we could say is, at least what I can see, is that in my opinion, we are moving out of an old era into a new one, which contains a promise only, because it will take a lot in the way of negotiations, and it will take a lot in the way of understanding between Mao Zedong, Joe, and you, and it'll take a degree of understanding on the part of the members of Congress as well. As far as I'm concerned, if I can answer a question, I will try and do so in the right manner, but I will stop and think before I do. Generally speaking, I'm going to follow John Stennis' advice and throw the ball back to you and say that this is just in the beginning. There's a long way to go. China has taken a long step, but we have taken a long step. And what we want to do is to see a continuation of these steps to the end that it might be possible to arrive at a new modus operandi, modus vivendi, by means of which peace in the world can be achieved.
Mike, I appreciate that. I would just add this one thing. I think it's perfectly proper for you to say that the President, the Secretary of State, and the President said that we would welcome on a private basis your suggestions, recommendations, and so forth with regard to this, and we have set up the channels of communication for that purpose.
Second,
I think it's totally imperative that it be said, and I think you can come on as far as what my position is. And secretaries, all of us here, that is as far as our side is concerned, administration, that we decline to speculate, and that is true, as you have noted very carefully, we decline to speculate on what effect this would have on our relations with other countries. That any speculation on our relations, the effect it has on other countries, would not be interest of success of this meeting. We only said the purpose of this is a meeting between the United States and People's Republic of China to discuss our matters of mutual concern. And speculation about its effect on other parts of the world, I decline to speculate upon it, and the Secretary has no answer. That's the advice.
first, so.
He said, yeah, I just read it, he just went to.
He worked.
The purpose of this meeting is to get the cast this rundown of what they've all read on the last pages. There are very hard indications of the necessity for total discipline in the administration with regard to what to say on this matter. Summarize the problem in a couple sentences. One, without total secrecy, the announcement on Thursday would have never been made. Without total secrecy, the meeting will not succeed. Now, this is difficult in our society. People say, why can't I know, and can't you just tell me, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But that's the game. Now, the reasons for it, this is a summer state, probably the most momentous development in foreign policy for a sit out of there. Back 2 years, the president
develop some communication to the communist Chinese. And at the same time directed the NSC to come up with more formal position which would convey our new approach. The first full public statement of the new approach was made by Bill in Canberra in the summer of 1969 as an integrated position, and at the same time the president on his trip around the world spoke to a number of leaders who later were helpful in establishing contact for us on a more personal basis. So for about a year and a half, there were intellectual efforts going on. One, a series of formal steps which we took publicly, trade visas and so forth, and public statements which were made by various senior officials. And then a series of private communications that were going on through several channels that had been developed. All of which accounted, for example, for the fact that during the Laotian operation, while everyone was telling us we were going into special war with communist China, we were quite confident that the opposite was much more likely to happen than what was predicted. The president in his in a toast to Cochescu, for example, which the press never picked up, but which we're sure the Chinese picked up, refers for the first time to the People's Republic of China last October. Then he repeated that publicly in February when he introduced the foreign policy report, his foreign policy report on radio to the American public. And so and lie during, in early March, at a time at the height of the Laotian operation, publicly stated that he had noted the fact that the president now referred to China as the People's Republic of China. Just trying to give you some feel for the process. Now this was the general phase. Now then, about the same time, a little bit before the beginning of ping-pong diplomacy, we were getting unmistakable communications that the Chinese were interested in some more concrete discussions. And then the question was how we could most usefully conduct them. And it was decided, the president decided to keep these, to have the initial contact secret. The reason being that if we had announced a public mission, there would have been unbelievable speculation, and we would have been negotiating with the New York Times and the Congress and everyone except Drew and Lai before anyone ever got there. And also the pressures of the Chinese would have been very great to reassure and so forth. As it was the only concern that the Chinese had about the secrecy, which from every point of view they welcomed, was the King's room. One of the things that most bothered Zhou Enlai was Douglas's refusal to shake hands with him in 1954, and he thought that maybe this was another one of these attempts of being not wanting to be seen with him.
Anyway, but say they have had a foreign minister since.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Well, they had this one now. But that's right, Well, at any rate, we then arranged a secret trip, knowledge of which was kept to the very fewest people within this government, and which was set up in a rather complicated way. All the time they were in Pakistan, they were shuttling cousins up to residents in the mountains to keep up the cover. And across the Himalayas and directly to Peking. The Chinese kept their side of the bargain absolutely meticulous. Whenever we moved publicly, they either had us in cars, which could, or when we went one morning, they gave us massage seats in the Forbidden City. They cleared everyone out of the Forbidden City.
so that there was no danger of, there's no chance of being seen by anyone. When we met, one of the meetings was at the grave, what they call the Great Hall of the People, which they used for ceremonial occasions. They cut us in through a basement entrance. And they did all this while the North Korean Prime Minister was in their city. And one has the impression he didn't know that thing of what was going on. Extraordinarily courteous, very intelligent. True, like conducted all of the negotiations himself, all of the discussions himself. They weren't negotiations in the strict sense. Conducted all of the discussions himself. Not ever having a note in front of them. I had a rather thick book, which the president, several of us had prepared, but sort of felt a little clumsy with this fellow who was sitting there without a note. Except for the drafting of the communique, where he stayed out of it in order to avoid confrontation, as soon as it was agreed, last hour he was out in the garden while we were working on it. He came in, and then we had a final 2-hour session. We spent practically every waking hour with him while we were there, except for the 3 hours of sightseeing one morning, and had very extensive talks. Now, I can't go into the substance of the talks, which in any case not conclusive, because only the president is really in a position to make the commitments. But it's obvious that for them this is a very serious decision. Here they've been the revolutionary vanguard of the world, inviting the arch imperialists to their capital. And it has as many complexities for them as it has for us. They've obviously made a very serious decision, even a somewhat sullen decision for them. The other hand, it requires an outcome that we treat them with great meticulousness. I have no illusions, none of us has any illusions, about the long-range purposes that they may have, but in this present phase, for their own reasons, necessity has brought us to this point, and necessity can shape our future relationship, if we are both conscious of the pressures under which we operate. And therefore, they have been very concerned that we not embarrass them with excessive speculation, that we don't say what they may or may not do, or any of if you can see, for example, in the newspaper today that Hanoi has already published an article warning against great power imperialism. The idea that Hanoi would ever call Peking, used the word imperialist is applied to Peking. If anyone had predicted that 3 months ago, we would have been accused of an insane credibility gap. So we shouldn't do anything that enables opponents within China or other communist countries who may want to use this for their own rivalries to be able to embarrass them. And this is why the meetings were intensive, serious, obviously most anxious to have a full talk with the president. It is amazing with what degree of care they follow public statements in the United States. I've said it in the other meeting, and I can just repeat it. The president made a set of off-the-cuff remarks in Kansas City on the 6th, on the way to the West Coast, which is the 7th in China. I got there on the 9th, in other words, 48 hours later. That evening, I got a detailed grilling from True and Lie about what the president said in Kansas City.
next day I'm gonna detail through the problem, Mel said, to prepare to try to eat less than what he said. And they follow it with enormous attention. Then I told him I wasn't quite up to since all I had were newspaper accounts. And so at breakfast I found the full text of the speech of the president's remarks next to my table, and apparently they got next to my plate, and apparently they don't have a Xerox system yet, because he said, no, this is our only copy, can you please get it? And it was annotated, and there was a typo in there which gave the wrong impression about the amount of economic aid we had given to Europe since the war. The typo said 1,100 billion, and the president had said 100 billion. And Drew and I couldn't figure out how we could have given 1,100 billion. And frankly, I didn't know where the president got the figure from, so I had to. So when I checked, when I got back, I found out that it was a typo. I mentioned it only during the guy in the BLS. To indicate the enormous attention they pay to our statements. And another thing, they really got out of their way. I was out of communication while I was there. And every morning they gave me a set of AP, UPI, Reuters dispatches. They were delivered to me in the state guest house where I was staying. And every session, Drew and Lai began with a 15-minute briefing of the world situation as they got it on the cables. Said, you might like to know that the following events have happened in the last 24 hours that are not in the dispatches. When I came back, I found that he gave me an absolutely objective briefing. Didn't color it, didn't editorialize. I mentioned it only to indicate that they are obviously, they've obviously made a command decision now, serious. But it is a fragile thing and it could easily be blown. And they're particularly sensitive about any speculation of how it might affect surrounding areas, relations with the Soviet Union, even more relations with Vietnam. And anything that implies that they have given up their ideological purity is just going to put them into an impossible position. That's the reason why it's really absolutely essential that we say that we don't speculate, that we don't say it's a great coup for Vietnam, and it's bound to have effects other places, and the Russians are going to have to think twice or anything of the kind. The theme we should have is the one that the president mentioned in his speech. This is for world peace, and anything that's good for world peace is good for all the people in the world, including Russia and Southeast Asia. Because the really final, important talks were the ones I conducted, which just really laid a groundwork, but the ones the president was meant to conduct. And those are the ones we mustn't jeopardize.
Now, Bill, go ahead. I really don't have much to add. We're going to have a serious problem on the question of self-discipline. Can we manage to be disciplined ourselves as a government? We just had a long meeting with legislative leaders imploring them to keep in mind sensitivity. This involved, as Andrew's mentioned. This can turn out to be a step forward for peace or in the board, depending on how we conduct ourselves between now and the day of the meeting. And it's particularly important that no one from the administration say anything that would jeopardize the prospects of the visit. We have difficulty with members of the Congress because they're just not used to discipline, but we also are going to have difficulty with members of the administration. Because a lot of the things that you would normally say in an innocent fashion could be very harmful here. I mean, speculation about what the effect might be on our relationship with Japan, or that this might have a favorable impact on war, Vietnam, all those things could jeopardize the visit.
And one other thing, if I may add, any speculation in regard to the favorable impact on political situation, the United States must be avoided at all costs.
You don't really have to say anything. The events, speak for themselves, and the less we say, the better. So that I think, just to close this portion of what I'm going to say, keep in mind that the cabinet minister or the deputy or the undersecretary or the lower down official who says something that causes this mission to fail is going to be in deep trouble. It's not the old party, it's not the president, you wish you'd have everybody. And get that word to all of your subordinates. Secondly, and briefly, we have we have three areas of difficulty, one with the Congress, one with our own family, and one with other nations. And that's something I'm going to start immediately as soon as I leave here. We've got to discuss them with the other nations sufficiently to convince them that we're not doing something behind their backs that changes our relationship with them. This is not a deal that we pull off at their expense. The president made a comment to that which was very helpful in his television remarks. But we have to hold our hands a good deal, and we can't tell them very much, because if we tell them very much, then they tell their press, and it gets repeated as a statement by the United States given to them. So it's a very difficult, dangerous line that we're walking. On the other hand, the prospects for success are tremendous. The world reaction has been basically good. We have some concern about the world reaction. It's been almost uniformly good in nations like Cambodia and Laos that might not have favored it to come out publicly very strong supporter statements. Nations like India and Japan have also issued strong public statements. So the general reaction has been exceptionally favorable. We've had people's lives have issued very supportive statement. The Russians haven't known how to handle it. They've said anything to speak of. So that the facts themselves are so dramatic and significant. The events that occurred, and the fact that the president was able to do this in a way that wasn't known, the time that followed it on Pentagon papers and soldier books, and said everything we did was window. The sheer prospect of peace, which is there, this should work out. It could provide peace for the future generations. And on the other hand, it could be very unsuccessful, depending on how we conduct ourselves. So, Mr. President, all I have to say is to support the plea that Henry made for ultimate discretion on everyone's part. This is one of the most successful things that's happened in international life in our time. If we can just keep it successful, it's something that I'm proud of.
I think there are three things that three or four points that I have to underline this. The questions that will be inevitably asked, how does this affect the Russians? And I was going to go back to the statement that I made that's not directed against any other country. How does this affect our situation in Vietnam? I simply say that we won't speculate on that at all. The point that should be made is that this is simply something that is being, that the United States, mainland China, are discussing matters of mutual interest that we are not going to speculate about. That's the primary purpose. And we're not going to speculate about peripheral effects of that meeting. How does it affect Japan? We're not going to speculate about that. How does it affect India? You see here, China's potential competitors and or enemies. How does it affect Indonesia? The same. We're not going to speculate about that. This is about China and the United States. And anything that these two great powers, they develop a new relationship. That could contribute to the peace of the world. How it
affects any one of these, that's something not to be speculated about. And that should be just an absolute curtain on that. Well, then they'll say, okay, well, it's something, you know, and then tell you anything. You say, I'm just dumb, I just don't know. Now, this is difficult because in this town, everybody expects people to say, to be on the know, and you don't want to appear to be stupid. Everybody knows what you do is that you read the columns, of course, that are correct. And in the way you align is about the amount of you think the people in Hanoi are saying, have you read Hanoi Radio? But no, I read that, I'm not speculating about it. The president says, this is about China and the United States. We're not going to speculate about any speculation. I can emphasize again that without secrecy, this meeting would not have taken place in the first one. And without secrecy, the second one will not succeed. And that means total secrecy. That means everybody's in the shadow again. Total commitment in all departments of the government, except what I've said. Don't speculate. Don't talk. Don't answer any questions. Act just as dumb. Possibly can, done in a sense, and people will respect you more and more too, because they'll know that you know a hell of a lot more. I think that's really what we have to get across. The other thing I think is to have in mind what the true meaning in terms of our world in the future. When we talk about success, let us say that success is not the aim and the event. Have a different relationship with the communist Chinese that all of our problems in Asia and that them will evaporate. Not at all. And having good relations with the nation doesn't mean you don't have terribly difficult problems. You have excellent relations with the British. We're fighting them all the time. We're supposed to have good relations with Canada, and they give us trouble all the time. Our relations with Japan is supposed to be good, and they're giving us a hell of a lot of trouble on textiles and so forth and so on. Even with our friendship from the present time, we negotiate with the Russians. We well know that whether it's Artist Control or Berlin or the Mideast, they have a totally different objective than we have. All we're trying to work out is a little bit, and then install would be the Chinese. The fact that we get to know each other. I don't know, direct pictures in the comment that one of the little ping-pong players said, well, when the president goes, he hopes that he get out and meet the Chinese people and not just talk to the leaders. Now, that's just this is not a cosmetic trip. This isn't for the purpose of seeing a forbidden city in the Chinese wall. This isn't for the purpose of going over and getting to know people and all that sort of thing. In terms of knowing the people, sometimes not the Chinese people, and they're very admirable in many ways. People. And the purpose of this at the very highest level to discuss matter of very great seriousness with a very, and therefore, insofar as the grand tour, the usual things that happen, the so-called quote goodwill tour and so forth, it's nothing like it. And when people compare this with, they say it's like Glasper or Eisenhower was planning to go to Russia, a goodwill trip or something like that. Totally different. Take the difference between our relations here and the relations with the Soviet. The Soviet, we have certain channels. We're discussing SALT, we're discussing the Middle East, we're discussing Berlin in these various channels. The difference is that with China, we have none. And therefore, there has to be an initial discussion at the very highest level in order just to get started. And so consequently, even comparing the difference between a Soviet summit and a Chinese summit, a Soviet summit would be useful only if there was something to talk about. Other than I've been going to see the Kremlin. I've seen the Kremlin four times. It's very interesting. And I'd like to go again because I missed a couple of times last time. I want to look at them again. But the important thing here is that with the Chinese, we are taking this not for the purpose of seeing China, but for seeing the man. Or men, we're going to make great decisions that affect our relations and perhaps the rest of the world. And therefore, it has a totally different context than most of the superficial analysis that people say, well, this will be a great thing, a wonderful country, a great political effect, one the alternative is to enter a deal with the Soviet and the Chinese neighbors, the communist Chinese neighbors, and maybe work out the talks here and there and the other, let's take arms and controls as you got on the Soviet. France is a main next, that's not now, it'll be about 10 years from now, 20 years from now. Arms control of the Soviet is going to regret the burden paper is written on if China's outside the world. As a main purpose of this meeting is arms control. That could be, that there is no alternative at the present time. If we look at the world in terms of not simply the short term of getting the war in Vietnam over with, working out Berlin, and possibly the Middle East, some better relation to the Soviets. But looking at the world in terms of 25 years, don't try to look any further. You can't have a fourth of the people of the world with an enormous capability and potentiality and building a significant nuclear capability. You cannot have them isolated from the rest of the world and have the world any chance of some kind of peace, live and let live. That's about as much as it will ever be to the kind of difference of systems we have. That's why we hesitate to risk the statement that our great risks in this, our relations with the Republic of China and Taiwan, are very significant. If you're asking about that, just say the Secretary of State will be studying the matter.
Sucking around
everybody in this government and see, well, what do you know, and so forth. And they had anybody in any department speculating, say this, that, or the other thing. That, any kind of a little foot twit, considering the fact that these characters on the other side, these people read everything that is said over here, and are actually totally suspicious of us. Remember, we don't establish the trust here. We started by, able to keep this secret, we have taken a long step forward in gaining their confidence that they not trust us, but at least that they can talk to us in secrecy, which they must do. Now, if this might, people speculate around this and that, and say, oh, these people are like a sieve, just forget it. There won't be any negotiations. We do have to do this. I mean, too, that doing so, I can say that we have some problems. When the meeting will take place is what obviously is raised. And later, the party can say that we originally put in, not later than May 1st, obviously, because it doesn't be in the political season. The reason we didn't indicate a date before that is that we don't want to tie their hands or ours with regard to the necessity for very intensive preparation for it. Because this meeting must be well prepared. We do not have diplomatic relations, therefore the preparation must be taken roundabout channels. But there must be intensive preparation so that when we go there, since we're not simply going for the purpose of the usual banquets and all that jazz, going there for this purpose of hard, tough discussions and so forth, we will be well prepared. We will have a meeting just as soon as they think and we think that we are prepared to have a time visual meeting for them and for us. That's the way it stands at the present time. It's momentous in terms of its future effect on the world has been discussed. We simply, if you put it in context, have to look at it this way. 1/4 of the world's people live in China. And anybody that knows Chinese know that they are among the most capable people in the world. Really limited. The Russian standpoint, they don't, as a matter of fact, have discussion with anybody of significance at the present time in terms of government. And the irony is that the United States now, because of certain tests we don't need to go into, is the chosen instrument for the purpose of beginning this process of ending their isolation. Enormous burden, an enormous opportunity, and it is one of the great risks. But the one risk that we all want to take care of, course, is we don't want to blow it by yakking. So I know that we don't need to tell that to you individually, the thing that I think. And we're going to have a meeting with the White House staff to tell that exactly the same thing over the Congress and the rest. But if you can, just tell all your people. This meeting is going to be held. It's going to be well prepared. That's that.
President, I wondered, I talked with Jerry too. I was here just for a minute or two. He will be seeing him testifying out there 3 days this week.
Gosh.
In the reports which I transmitted to you this morning, Japan and Korea. In my discussions there, I always started in with your foreign policy speech, a statement to Congress coupled with your Kansas City statement, which I was in communication, so I got that right away. The fact that during this period of negotiations, the other two pillars of the Nixon Doctrine also must be maintained. That is our strength and our development, continued development of our partnership. My concern is that, particularly, I think Hugh reads into this thing some things that could
some problems from the standpoint of where we are from preparedness standpoint. Where we are from the necessity for our military assistance program. This does not diminish the need for a strong national security position. It does not diminish the need for our military assistance programs. And the other two very important pillars of the Nixon Doctrine, and this is enunciated in your foreign policy report to the Congress, still are important. And I hope that we can keep those in mind too, so that we don't just break away and say that negotiations is the only pillar of the Nixon Doctrine.
Absolutely. Well, another way you can put that in another context, without of course putting it in a belligerent term, which of course you wouldn't. But let's face it, they aren't doing anything. It's putting in another context with the Russians. When we started the SALT negotiations, some of the senators said, well, now that we started these negotiations, let's indicate that we're going to quit building ABMs. Well, what are they doing? The whole point is that the beginning of a dialogue, and it is simply the beginning of a dialogue, does not change the power equation in the world. And for the dialogue to succeed, it means the United States must maintain its position, maintain its commitments, until there is some change which would give us the reason to change. No, I think it's absolutely.
Mr. President, I'd like to comment about that. Bell's absolutely right, of course. It doesn't change anything in that respect, but it does just what the President says it does. It gives us an opportunity to improve our relations with China, and if we do that, it has, could have many ramifications. The point is, though, that a matter of timing, if what we say now publicly, even if it's a restatement of what we said before, appears to be motivated by a desire to say that the communist Chinese, look at, you're not getting away with something, this doesn't mean this, that would be harmful. So if we can be very thoughtful,
restrained,
about what we say, we may want to say something, but let's say very little. That we're not going to have any difficulty with the Congress now. I mean, the leadership this morning was quite aware of the fact this doesn't change anything. It gives us a great opportunity for progress. But if we've got to be very careful what we say, if trouble is going to be, everybody is going to want to say something. He says, my God, we've got this danger, so I've got to be sure that we can cut him off at the pass, so I'll make a statement. Hugh Scott has already made one statement. Now, why don't we quit making statements? If there's a statement to be made on this subject, let the President authorize it. It's an administration, let's be disciplined. If we feel that we have to make a statement on this subject, we'll check with the President, and he'll authorize it, and then we'll... But let's do it in a planned way. Let's not haphazardly all be decide to be presidents or something else. Let the President be the President, and he'll authorize the statements. I mean, this is the problem we have. We're also accustomed to saying, well, this is a danger.
So I'll say that in the domestic field as well.
Yes.
This is not the time to discuss it. We blow our opportunities in the domestic field by yakking around and saying, well, we're considering this, and this department is fighting this one and that and the other thing, reading congressmen and senators and saying, we're going to stop that crap. We've got too much of that reading thing that we need to do is to handle more things like we handle this, get something out of it.
For example, Mr. President, if in our discussions with other governments, we tell that something with private, we say, look, if we want you to understand this is the real President, had analysis made it, the captain, here's what he said, I'll tell you, because that's what they'll tell somebody in their government, take the Japanese, they, anything you tell them, they tell their press. So we've got to be careful what we tell other governments, even in private conversations, socially we've got to be careful. This is the warning, it seems to me, that we all have to listen to.
I would say now in your case, because you do have to testify, that the line really is basically the tone and the mood rather than the statement, and just to say, well, as far as this is concerned, we, of course, these talks are going to take place and so forth. Well, now what does this do with regard to our need for defense?
that we would change.
Henry, does that sound right to you?
That's right. I think that's the way to do it in a low-key way. We need the defense, we need the military system, but not to say it as if we are tone defense.
Yeah, that's the important thing, so that they don't get the, I think they are far more sensitive to tone than the Russians are, because the Russians would do it so brutally that it isn't a question of nuances with them. The nuance will make a big difference.
And timing is really important too.
But of course, Mel isn't
getting control over the timing. He testifies for 3 days.
No, no, but I mean, we may want to later on take a stronger stand on some defense matters, but at the moment, anything that we say is going to be scrutinized very carefully, and he says they're watching.
But so we can't change, so I didn't feel like that kind of draft.
I put it in terms of that.
And another thing, too, is that you don't need to reassure, you need to be defensive to the Congress and all the rest. Let's understand that basically they don't understand. And they mean well, they have time to study it. And so consequently,
separating speculation from
I was in Kansas City when you made your statement, and looking back on it now, it was a terrific statement as to why the subsequent trip by Henry and the announcement by you is desirable. If that is approvable by you, I would think it would be well for the people in the cabinet to look at it.
It's not. Because this is what we don't want to do. Now, if the trip is successful,
no, they're going to be asked, everyone in this room is going to be asked,
all you have to do is repeat what...
That statement's out. That's my point. This is it's public record. It's all out in the press. It's been cited repeatedly in the press. That's been...
Well, if it's just a restatement, no,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but the problem is if you restate it, I tend to agree with Phil. If you put it into your own words, it's going to be loose again.
That's right.
If you refer to the president's speech and say he stated it all in his Kansas City speech and in his world report, that's fine. But if we read...
Very careful not to go beyond it or interpolate or to interpret. I think that's the important thing. The president said in Kansas City that is okay. But I think basically the less said the better. I mean, and this is going to be very troubled, but let's face it. Subject is subject A. Everybody has to subject A. That'll be subject A. The other thing incidentally that would be subject A is Albert said, is what you do about Vietnam. Of course it is. It's going to be what you're going to do about Vietnam. Are we going to do it? Are we going to be asked that and so forth? And the answer is, this is about China and the United States. I'm not going to speculate about what's going to be Vietnam. We all must say that. And I will simply say that I think it's really time for people in the administration and people in the Congress, I'm not speaking of our Democratic friends, but of our Republican friends, and perhaps this little incident may bring it home, not to assume that the knives are goddamn dumb. They got to assume that we're doing something, not just on China, but a few other places, but you've got to have confidence. And for everybody to go out and say, the president ought to do this, hope he ought to do that, I think he ought to do this, I don't think he ought to do that, all that does is make it impossible to run this office. Now that's really what it gets down to. And that is why the Mansfield Amendment, for example, is a disaster. And that is why any kind of restriction setting on this or that or the other thing, all it does, it means that you walk into, it means that you walk into. Now, what I'm going to say right now is, I am not suggesting one way or the other that anything is going on Vietnam. Just don't assume we're not. That's all. But they must be doing something.
I think the point we like is important, Mr. President, because I don't know how they're going to try to read things in our casual figures this week. They'll try to tie it up with some action of the Red Chinese instead of related with weather. Instead of going to the same, you know.
How long are they going to be?
11. The lowest since August, 6 years ago.
11.
Mr. President, we can't emphasize it enough, so it obviously we can't prevent speculation by the press or others. What is dangerous is anything any of us said. Now, if we ourselves decide, well, hell, this is all right, the president said it in Kansas City, as Henry says, it may be the timing is different. When he said it in Kansas City, this wasn't public knowledge.
Right.
It seems to me that we should, if we're going to say anything, it's just repeat what the president said in his television program. And take the words there, they're good words, say that.
Nothing else. About a period either. I think the less we say about China, the less we're going to be.
Sure.
If we don't say anything about China, then everyone knows something is going on. The more we say, the more we take away from it, and the more we will force them into replying to us and give the Russians quotations they can use against the Chinese. So.
Let's put it this way. Anything we say will not help us with the Chinese. They don't want to hear what I say. Second, anything that we don't say could help us.
us in arms with others, because they will think that perhaps much more is going on than actually is. Now, that's really what you get down to. And it's this push, you know, knowledgeable, to be responsive, to the public right to know and so forth, that makes it impossible for a free government like ours to conduct a foreign policy that is effective as a totalitarian government like theirs. They don't have the problem of a bunch of people that have to be so damn smart. As soon as they're too smart, they cut off their heads.
Mr. President, the most difficult words for the American utter is damned if I know.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to say that.
Mr. President, I think in spite of what we speculate about, I believe the political reaction is very, very favorable. And if you put yourself on the other side, I think that what we better be in for and prepared for is an onslaught on domestic issues. I think it's just going to come. I don't think we're going to have a... I don't think we're going to be forced into sitting silent in any confrontation with the press or media, because I believe the vast array of people that are running for president and the Congress who are trying to undermine the administration are going to see in this a great political plus, and they're going to have to counteract. And I think what we've got to do is get our ducks in a row and come together much more in a much more unified way on domestic issues. Well, as a matter of fact, that will be a bonus for us. You see, now, in a sense, on this issue, as it affects this issue, it may not be on that issue, but if our Democratic friends, as I'm sure that the candidates, if they now quit talking about foreign policy, which they should, and probably will. If they had any mind, then they're right. Well, for example, Kennedy said nothing. Musk said, well, the real problem is arms control. Anyway, the third, but this means then that the line of attack will be escalated enormously on the domestic front. So that means that on the domestic front, we therefore will have to be front and center. And attacking. So that's a very good point to get. And to get, that's right. It's a very good point. And so we'll join battle on that issue. And having in mind the fact, too, that they, of course, are extremely vulnerable on this issue. Okay.